Welcome to Pinophile Live. This is Rusty Gaffney, the Prince of Pinot. And today I'm featuring Volume 6, Issue 51 of the Pinophile, dated January 20th, 2008. The topic today is the Russian River Valley, what I call bone in the USA. This is really a subject or a region that's close to my heart. I just love to visit the Russian River Valley. It's only located about 60 miles north of downtown San Francisco, and it's so easily accessible, but yet once you enter the region, it almost seems like you're in another world. Sure, there's a lot of traffic still on some of the major highways, such as 101, which travels north through the area, but once you get off the main roads and you get on the back roads, West Side Road, East Side Road, Fry Road, some of these wine roads that have famous names, you'll find very, very few cars, a few bicyclists, and just beautiful, beautiful scenery and acres of gorgeous vines. The four corners of the Russian River Appalachian are the towns of Healdsburg and Guerneville in the north, and Sebastopol and Santa Rosa in the south. There are about 126,000 acres of rolling hills, dense redwood forests, and apple orchards, and about 15,000 of these acres are planted to vineyards. The Russian River Valley has an interesting history. It's actually named for Russian explorers who settled at Fort Ross, just north of Jenner, where the Russian River flows into the Pacific Ocean. The Pomo Indians were the original inhabitants of the Sonoma Coast and the Russian River Valley, and had named the Russian River Shabakay, or Long Snake, for its many twists and turns. The Russians, who came later, had their own name, Slavyanka, or Pretty Russian Girl. By 1867, the Russians had completely left North America and left behind the anglicized names Russian River Valley and Russian River as their legacy. The defining feature of the Russian River Valley is a single three-letter word, fog. Fog from the Pacific Ocean is the most important single influence on viticulture here, and it defines the boundaries of the Russian River Valley Appellation, which was established in 1983. The fog enters the valley during the growing season from the southwest through the Petaluma Wind Gap between Point Reyes and Bodega Bay, with a smaller incursion traveling inward along the Russian River from its origins at Jenner on the Sonoma coast. There is plenty of daytime warmth, and this gives way to cool nights and mornings caused by the fog that pours in through the gap. The result is slowed ripening and extended hang time for the grapes. The wine growers here like to say they turn fog into Pinot Noir. There are actually a number of varietals that thrive in the diverse microclimates of the Russian River. It was the so-called field blends of varietals such as Grenache, Mouvadre, Carignane, Petite Syrah, Syrah, and Alicante Boucher, along with Zinfandel, that the Italian-Americans grew so successfully and popularized here. Some of these Italian-American immigrant families, such as Seguccio, Rocchioli, Pedrocelli, Fappiano, Pellegrini, still make wine in the Russian River Valley. But with time, the region has really become the chosen one for growing the two Burgundian varietals, Pinot Noir and Chardonnay. The Russian River is about 105 miles in length, beginning its journey in the coastal mountains in the north near the town of Willits in Mendocino County, and winding south through the Alexander Valley before reaching the Russian River Valley. Just below the town of Healdsburg, the river takes a turn and heads west toward the Pacific Ocean. At the point of this turn, the surrounding area is the so-called middle reach of the valley, the sweet spot and the birthplace of Pinot Noir viticulture in the Russian River Valley. The first to plant Pinot Noir along West Side Road in the middle reach was Steve and Helen Bacigalupi in 1964. In 1968, shortly after his father passed away, Joe Roccioli Jr., in deference to his father's wishes, planted Pinot Noir on West Side Road along the banks of the Russian River. This became the now infamous East Block of Pinot Noir. West Block followed a year later. In 1973, Davis Bynum, a San Francisco Chronicle reporter, built the first winery on West Side Road, and he produced Pinot Noir from Joe Roccioli Jr.'s first crop. The 1973 Davis Bynum Roccioli Vineyard Pinot Noir was the first Russian River Valley Vineyard designate wine. The following year, Gary Farrell, who had majored in political science at Sonoma State University, decided to become a winemaker, and he took a job at Davis Bynum. In 1982, Gary Farrell started his own label, Gary Farrell Wines, and began crafting Pinot Noir from Roccioli grapes vinified at Davis Bynum. He continued as winemaker for Davis Bynum up until 2000. Also in 1982, Joe Roccioli Jr. and his son Tom started the Roccioli label. The first wines were made by Farrell at Davis Bynum, but by 1985, Tom Roccioli had quit his job in the banking business, joined his father as the winemaker, and Roccioli label was on its way. Gary Farrell would often hand-deliver his wines to customers in the valley, one of whom was Ed Salem, who was the wine buyer for Spears Market in Forestville. Gary Farrell has been reported as saying, "Ed Salem and Burt Williams' entry into the business caught me by surprise. Ed would ask me about the Roccioli vineyards, about winemaking, and I gave him the recipe. It never occurred to me what he was up to until Joe Roccioli told me he had sold grapes to William Salem." The now legendary William Salem Winery was the original Russian River Valley garage winery. Burt Williams hailed from Sebastopol and worked as a proofreader for the San Francisco Chronicle newspaper agency. He began making wine at home as a hobby. Ed Salem made beer and fruit wine in his garage in Forestville in Sonoma County. Together, they began making wine from Sonoma Zinfandel grapes for their own use in 1979. The winery was started in a rented garage in Fulton beginning in 1981. The original name of the winery was Hacienda del Rio, a name Ed used on his first home-crafted wines. This wine was produced in a Forestville garage by Ed and Burt for friends and family and was not released commercially. The first three commercial wines, 1981 and 1983, were made at Russian River Vineyards in Forestville and bottled under that name. The wines were an instant success, and Burgundy lovers began to talk about the William Salem Pinot Noir in revered tones. The Hacienda del Rio label looked exactly like the current William Salem label, using the same letterpress lettering, color, and paper. A complaint from Hacienda Winery prompted the partners to drop the original name and substitute their own beginning in 1984. Burt Williams was a burly vintner who had an uncanny and self-taught sense of how Pinot Noir should be vinified. He never set foot in Burgundy. He never took a lot of formal training in winemaking. His production methods were old-fashioned, to say the least, and this was largely prompted by a lack of capital. In the early years, Burt continued his job in San Francisco, as did Ed at Spears Market, and they took vacations at crush time. They began with little money, never borrowed, and grew every year by starting small and plowing all their income back into the business. Their wives, Gail Salem and Jan Williams, were also partners in the winery, which early on hired no outside help. It was a perfect business partnership, as Burt was driven to make world-class wine, and Ed was determined to create a successful business from local agriculture. Burt preferred colorful sports shirts with suspenders. Ed opted for t-shirts and boots. The both of them lived simply and shunned publicity. There never was a sign at the garage announcing the winery's location, and there never was a tasting room. There were no great secrets, actually, to their success, except for the fact that they carefully chose their grape sources and did all the work in the winery themselves. Over time, it has become clear to North American vintners that Pinot Noir requires delicate handling and constant vigilance in the winery. But these were two things that Ed and Bert realized from the beginning. Their winemaking methods were old world, that is, Burgundian, in a sense. And this was primarily out of necessity because they had little money to fund their operation. Their techniques were very laborious, intense, and inefficient, but the result justified the effort. The Williams-Salem Pinot Noirs were brimming with varietal character, and although light in color, they had superb aromatic and flavor intensity. The method of Pinot Noir production employed by Bert and Ed is now currently practiced at least in some form by most California vintners of Pinot Noir. Both Bert and Ed spent a lot of time checking on their grapes in the vineyards. The grapes were picked ripe, put into wooden crates, and transported by pickup truck to the winery, where they were hand-sorted and destemmed. Fermentations were long and cool. They got into the fermentation tanks and did some punchdowns, but there was no crushing. The must was lightly pressed using a hand-operated basket press dating from 1906. The wine was gravity-racked, and the last gallons of juice were lifted out of the tanks in buckets. The wine never saw a pump, a fining agent, or filtration. Aging was carried out in mostly new Francois Frères French oak 225-liter barrels from Troncus Forest. The barrels were never used more than twice. All of the wine was hand-bottled, labeled, and foiled. Ed Salem developed the concept of a mailing list to distribute their wine long before mailing lists became the accepted way of allocating scarce wine in California. Early on, most of the Ed Williams Salem wine was sold to other winemakers and retailers with good palates, and they often hand-delivered their wines. But as the wines became more popular, a mailing list for consumers was necessary. The more wine Williams Salem made, the more favorable press that followed. This caused a snowball effect in demand. The 1985 Williams-Salem Rocchioli Vineyard Russian River Valley Pinot Noir became the most seminal wine in the history of California Pinot Noir. It won the sweepstakes at the California State Fair Wine Competition, voted the best of the 2,136 wines entered by 416 California wineries in 1987. Only 295 cases of that wine were produced, and it sold for $16 a bottle. One of the keys to the success, as I hinted to briefly, was that Williams-Salem was able to successfully contract with the very best growers in the Russian River Valley at the time. You have to remember that back then, it was a simpler time. Growers were very friendly, for the most part, were not out to make a lot of money. All of the contracts were by handshake. Williams-Salem never did own any vineyards, never needed to own any vineyards. Some of the names of vineyards that they access are now legendary and considered heritage vineyards in the Russian River Valley. These include Rocchioli, Allen Vineyard, Kahn Vineyard, Olivet Lane Vineyard. Then if you go out west to the Sonoma Coast, you have Summa Vineyard, Coastlands Vineyard, and Hirsch Vineyard. And then into the Anderson Valley, you have Precious Mountain and Farrington Vineyard. In 1989, Howard Allen, who was the owner of Allen Vineyard, which was located across the street from Rocchioli Vineyard on West Side Road, built Williams-Salem a winery on his ranch. And they leased this from him, and this allowed them to move out of their rented garage in Fulton. Williams-Salem Pinot Noir became so popular that a waiting list was developed for those begging to get on the mailing list. Eventually, 85% of the wine was sold directly to individuals on the carefully guarded mailing list. Ed managed the list masterfully and enjoyed being in contact with, visiting with, and learning from his devoted customers. Williams-Salem produced several credible Zinfandels, and in fact, Ed and Bert thought initially that Zinfandel would be their most successful wine. They also made some excellent Chardonnays, but it really was the Pinot Noirs that drew most of the attention. They were amazingly fruity and complex when young, and they seemed to age better than most Pinot Noirs in California. Bert used to say that they peaked around 6 to 7 years after release, but it was very difficult to avoid drinking them young. I can remember being on the list and getting the wines, and I just couldn't wait to get my hands on them and drink them. They were so easily drinkable upon release. The unlikely owners and the scarcity of their wine created a mystique. But it was really the wine's quality and consistency that was the attraction. I was one of the fortunate ones to be included on the mailing list beginning in 1991, customer number 3081. And I must say that the greatest California Pinot Noir I ever drank was the 1992 William Salem Rocchioli Vineyard Russian River Valley Pinot Noir. Wine writers in the 1990s spoke about William Salem with superlatives previously reserved for Burgundy. Dan Berger raved, best Pinot Noir in America, an arrival to the best in the world. Matt Kramer anointed William Salem the best Pinot Noir in California. Anthony Dias Blue chimed in, William Salem Pinot Noir shines above the rest. The customers were among the most devoted of any winery I personally have ever experienced then and now. One of the people on the mailing list from Tennessee wrote a funny story, a tongue-in-cheek bit that he sent in to the winery and was published in their newsletter, and I'd like to repeat it here because it's a hoot. Quote, we are a little concerned about my brother-in-law, who had never tried world-class wine until we shared a bottle of your 1991 Olivet Lane with him. Now he's lost interest in work and has moved the lazy boy downstairs into the wine cellar. He claims he just wants to watch, but it's hard to say what needs watching down there. We're all hopeful that he's just displaying the initial zeal of a new convert and that he'll return to a more or less normal life when he gets accustomed to venerating your wine. The popularity of their wines took their toll over the years on Ed and Bert. Managing the mailing list and the hordes of wine enthusiasts trying to get on the list was a daunting task. Two of the 7-time employees in the mid-1990s were designated as keepers of the list. There's a funny story about Ed Bradley, who was a correspondent on CBS's 60 Minutes. He was a wine enthusiast and wanted to get on the mailing list. Bert Williams tells a story saying, he told us if we didn't put him on the list, he'd get Andy Rooney to do a commentary on people who keep lists. Well, Bert said we couldn't have that, so we put him on. This is just one example of what people went through to try to get on the list. The partnership slowly developed some rife, and William Salem was put on the market in 1997. It was eventually sold to John Dyson in 1998 for $9.5 million. The official word was that Ed developed serious back problems from lifting wine cases over the years, but the reasons had to be more complicated, yet were never divulged. The last vintage that Ed and Bert vinified at William Salem was 1997, with Bert consulting on the 1998 vintage. At the time the winery was sold, there were 10,000 customers on the waiting list. John Dyson was a wealthy New York politician, a former New York State Agricultural Commissioner, and a former deputy mayor under Mayor Rudy Giuliani in New York. He owns Millbrook Vineyards in upstate New York and Villa Filo Estate in Tuscany, as well as Mistral and Vista Verde Vineyards on the Central California coast. He paid a lot of money for William Salem, but he basically only bought the name, because William Salem did not own a winery or vineyards. In addition, he lost some handshake agreements, such as those that were in place from Olivet Lane, Summa, and Rocchioli's West Block vineyards. Several vineyard sources did remain in place, however, and the winery has continued to have success. Ed and Bert almost closed the winery for good before agreeing to sell William Salem to Dyson, a longtime member of the mailing list. Dyson hired the relatively unknown Bob Cabral as his winemaker. Cabral, who himself was customer number 576 on the William Salem list, was the son of grape farmers who earned a degree in enology at Fresno State. Since taking over for Burt Williams, he has tried to follow Williams' winemaking methods. And although the early years were a bit inauspicious, I must say that although the wines are a touch higher in alcohol, deeper in color, and more fruit-driven, they are quite enjoyable and remain very popular. As the winery now celebrates its 25th anniversary with the release of the 2005 vintage, the wines continue to carry the flag with respectability, and the single vineyard designates continue to be the stars. Burt Williams now splits his time between his ranch in the Anderson Valley and his fishing boat in Santa Barbara. He grows Pinot Noir in his Morning Dew Ranch vineyard and sells his grapes to his daughter at Brogan Cellars and to Woodenhead and Whitcraft. When I ask him the inevitable question about making his own Pinot Noir again after the non-compete agreement ends next year, he was non-committal, but said, if I do decide to do it, I will devote all my energy seriously to the task. I will make small amounts of wine, and it will cost a lot of money. Ed has spent his summers in Alaska and winters in both California and Hawaii. His daughter, Denise Salem, and her husband, Kirk Hubbard, craft Pinot Noirs under the Westmar label, working in a small winery in Sebastopol, reminiscent in size of the original garage that Ed and Burt started with. William Salem, through the years, has become a training ground for many other winemakers, and a number of labels carry on the legacy, including Papa Pietro Perry, Woodenhead, George, Cobb, and Ant Hill Cellars. So that's pretty much the history of Pinot Noir in the Russian River Valley. Of course, the history continues. There are a lot of figures that I omitted, such as Joseph Swan, but for the most part, that hits the heart of the matter. If you decide to visit the Russian River Valley, I would suggest you go to the website www.wineroad.com, where you can obtain a brochure listing the major wineries and lodgings of the Russian River Valley. You can also call 800-723-6336. I would also suggest that you visit the Grape Radio website at www.graperadio.com. You can view the video that was produced by the Grape Radio crew called Stewards of the Land. It's basically a historical overview with interviews of the major figures in the Russian River Valley, such as Howard Allen and Joe Rocchioli. This video is very impressive and has recently been nominated for a James Beard Award. So that's pretty much it about Bone in the USA, at least for today. I'd like to wrap it up with just a couple interesting little briefs. I've done some impromptu wine glass tasting of late, comparing a number of different Riedel Pinot Noir glasses, such as the Venom Burgundy glass, the Oregon Pinot Noir glass, and the Vitus Pinot Noir glass. And I've compared California wines and Oregon wines in these glasses and try to be objective and try to evaluate the drinking experience, that is, the aromatics and flavors. Clearly, all three of these glasses are superior to the small tasting glass or the standard restaurant glass. But if I had to choose one glass, particularly for more classic, elegant styled Pinot Noirs, I would choose the Oregon Pinot Noir glass from Riedel. One other comment I'd like to make is about 2005 Burgundies. This vintage has been touted as one of the greatest vintages ever in Burgundy. And the wines from all levels in Burgundy appear to be stellar. Alan Meadows, who's known as the Berghound, has said, "My in-bottle tastings of the 2005s have served to reinforce my original belief that the vintage is one of the greatest vintages in the history of modern Burgundy." But the thing to remember is that these wines are built for the long haul. And many of them have now shut down in the bottle. So if you're doing any tasting and making some buying decisions, now you might be a bit disappointed because the wines are simply not showing that well. I think what you have to do is you have to rely on reliable sources such as Allen Meadows and look to producers that you can trust. When it comes to Burgundy, vintage is all important, but producers are almost as important. Remember that many of the vineyards are farmed by multiple producers. So the vineyard itself is no guarantee of quality. It's the producers that are more of a guarantee of quality.